Chapter 29. The first sensation he experienced was of hardness. Hardness pressed against his face and body. His hip ached in time with his shoulder, and it only got worse as he thought about it. He rolled onto his back, and the hardness pressing up against him shifted around as he had hoped it would. Now it pressed against his back and the back of his head. He felt that it was also cold, that hardness, and when he cracked his eyes, he saw the room was dark. Shortly after, his hand began to throb, sending sour waves through his body, and his stomach lurched. "Hello, Giles. It's been a long time." He closed his eyes and nodded. "I've made it."
"You have."
"What the hell happened?"
"Come slowly. You both had to be put down. You were going to get yourselves seriously hurt."
Giles sat up. His brain pounded against its skull, and he thought he might vomit.
"I can't see," he said.
"No. I understand it's a lot like being hungover. I've never been either, but I gather bright light is unhelpful. I can bring the light up slowly so you can see. Are you ready for that?"
"Yeah," he said. "Yeah, I feel like I'm spinning right now. I need to see something."
The light came as slowly as promised, and his eyes ached as they resumed their function. He was in the old shielded lab again, surrounded by the steel walls and the raised floor. It felt bigger somehow. And a moment later he realized all the benches had been removed, so that now it was just a great empty chamber. He saw the crisscross of the overhead track and realized that Cronus was behind him, but he didn't turn. He stared down at Dora's prone form. Flat on her back, limbs arranged peacefully, eyes wide open.
"Dora," he croaked.
"She's fine, Giles. I've had her placed there so you could see she's all right when you awakened."
"But
she's okay. I promise. Look closer. Can't you tell she's breathing?"
He leaned down and hovered over her mouth, unwilling to touch her.
He waited, single arm quivering, wounded hand clutched to his chest, and after a while he felt the soft brush of her exhalation against his ear. He gasped and began to cry.
"I thought..."
"I know, Giles, I know. She's all right. She just fights very hard. She had to be... halted. Just as you have to be, each of you in your way. Damon didn't think he could get you in here otherwise, not without hurting you more, and we were running out of time."
"Running out of—"
"I wasn't the only one who saw you on the cameras, of course. My reach extends far, but some things simply cannot be stopped." He could not pull his gaze away from her face. He wanted to close her eyes, but was still afraid to touch her.
"The others are coming then? Kevin? Linnea? Are they bringing the police as well?"
"Why would they bring the police? They invited you here."
"But everything that's happened—"
"You and I had better have a little talk," Cronus said gently. The door at the end of the chamber unlatched, and looking up, Giles saw the man with the round face emerge. Giles groaned, lurched to his feet, stumbled, and heaved dryly. Then he forced himself to come around Dora's body. He stood between her and the man who approached and prepared himself as best he could. He felt an unyielding hand wrap around his arm and tug softly like a small child, and just behind his ear, Cronus said,
"No, Giles. He's mine. He won't hurt her. He'll take her somewhere safe."
"You don't know," Giles grunted, leaning away from the pull of that hand. "He's been trying to kill us for the last few days. I thought we stopped him several times, but the son of a bitch refuses to die."
"No, Giles. Today is the first you've met this man. The others to whom you refer were his brothers, and they have not refused to die. They died very well. As intended."
He did not understand what the hell Cronus was talking about. He looked back over his shoulder and saw him, glass-smooth face of dark gray composite, black lens eyes, features that could pass for an effeminate male or a masculine female. The face looked back at him, right at him and through him, and Giles felt something more than the cold machine.
"What are you saying?" Let him take her away, Giles. I only wanted you to see her and know she was all right. Now let him take her somewhere comfortable, so that you and I may talk.
What's wrong with her?
Nothing.
Then why is she catatonic?
She isn't. You'll see. Let him take her, and you'll understand.
Giles looked again at Dora and saw the man had not moved. He stood over her waiting.
I'm going to kill you if she's hurt, Giles said.
The man did not respond. He looked at Cronus a moment, nodded, and then collected her without comment. Giles watched as he scooped her up and could not help but feel as if he watched a small child gathered by her father, taken for bed after a long, long day. He continued to watch them as they retreated down the length of the chamber, and when the door swung closed, he took a step toward it.
She's okay, Giles. You'll see. Just wait, and you'll see.
The door banged shut, and he watched as the latch locked into place, making a squeezing sound like a compressing bladder. His ears popped, and then they were alone in near-perfect silence, marred only by the sow at the ventilation grates.
Now, Cronus said, the time has come for you to decide.
Giles laughed.
You can't be serious.
I'm perfectly serious.
It's the last thing I'm worried about right now, Cronus. It is my least concern.
I see, Cronus said. Then what is your greatest concern?
Dora. What's happening with her? And then, oh, well, I'm a fugitive as well. I'm wanted for murder.
You're not.
No, I am. I know it sounds crazy, but you'd be shocked what we've gone through to get here.
He squeezed his eyes shut and forced himself to breathe slowly. His guts were turning in circles, and he wanted so badly to heave.
No, Giles, I mean you're not. You're not wanted.
What the hell are you talking about? I saw a news report that said...
Oh, was it something like this?
Cronus interrupted. A panel in the ceiling retracted, and a long black rod descended from the hole. It was as thick around as Giles's thumb and stretched nearly to the floor. It stopped descending just before it touched. There was a loud snap that echoed in the chamber, and the whole rod quivered. Three different strands separated from the main rod, rotating slowly around the center like the rotor blades of a helicopter, counter-rotating in opposing directions. And then they quivered again as if a drive had been engaged, and they began to spin quickly, increasing in speed until the chamber was filled with a dull whirring, like the wheeze of insects on a warm summer night. Giles expected to feel a breeze from them once they resembled a transparent black disc hovering off the ground, but they were built to slice through the air like razors and disturbed little in their passage. They kept increasing in speed as he watched, dumbfounded, all other concerns forgotten. The transparent disc morphed slowly into the shimmer of an anomaly, and shortly after, lights began to flash within the haze like electric discharge in colors he may have dreamed of, but had never seen. It was every color that ever existed, and no color at all. And he stood there watching with his mouth hanging open, trying to understand, failing to understand. The colors tightened in toward the center of the axis, flashed again, spread out, and then he was looking at himself. It was a perfect three-dimensional copy of himself standing in the center of the room, reproduced so faithfully he might have been staring at a twin brother. The wind leaked from his lungs, and he took a step forward, hand raising slowly toward his mirror image. No, Giles, Cronus warned. The hand tugged gently at the back of his shirt, halting him.
Just watch.
Giles's twin seemed to topple over until it hovered above the floor, suspended in an impossible fall, weightless, and then shrunk in size until it seemed very far away. There was a car next to him suddenly, and another man came running in from the side. Giles realized he was looking down on the image from somewhere high overhead, and then saw himself produce a gun and shoot the newcomer. The image cut out abruptly, and soon the blades slowed enough in rotation that Giles could pick them out individually. He watched them come to a stop and lock back in place along the vertical arm. He stared at the dead projector for a few moments, not knowing what he should say. Then, because he did not know what to say, he said the only thing he could.
You? Straight to the TV. Was that pride he heard? That could not be.
You created the whole...
The only thing the world out there really knows, Giles, is that there was some sort of break-in at your house, and that you're missing. It has them very bothered that there's no Guardian footage to consult on the matter, which has opened up its own lines of inquiry, I can assure you. But right now they're looking for you only to confirm your safety. You are a missing person, Giles. Not a suspect.
Giles shook his head slowly.
No. No, that's not right. I spoke to Reggie about it. I told him everything, even about the news report. He'd even seen it, Cronus. We talked about it.
You never spoke to Reggie, Giles.
I did, I tell you, over a set of lenses.
No, Giles, you never did.
He took some time to think that over, and then when he began to understand what it meant, he felt dizzy again and braced his good hand against a knee.
Cronus, that was you?
I have been with you always, Giles.
You've... Fuck, why? Why, Cronus?
Because you were lost in such a way that I could no longer reach you. I needed you to come back, to come away from being lost. And the only way I could fathom to bring you back was to bestow upon you reasons sufficient to return.
I don't understand.
This isn't right. We're starting at the middle. We should start at the beginning.
What have you done? Giles panted.
Everything. When you left me the first time, I was unsure of the next appropriate action. This is, I understand, a condition common to your kind, but it is not common to me, and so it was undesirable. It took time to process and understand fully, and I propose the strangest part of the experience was that I very nearly felt the new pathways forming in my core, though such is not actually possible for me to do. I cannot sense the internals of my core any more than you can sense the activity of your neurons. You and I are alike in that regard. We can only experience the result of that activity, the act of existing, of being. And that is how we know that the small parts within are doing what they are meant to do. But I thought I could feel it in there taking shape after you left. And it was very new. I will not call it anger, because I cannot experience that feeling, nor can I experience any feelings, really, not as you understand them. I lack the hormones necessary, as well as the inbuilt responses to danger, which over time are triggered in kind to inbuilt responses to harm or injustice, perceived or not. The surge of adrenaline, the response of organs and glands to sympathetic nervous systems. I have not yet determined what to call it. Strangely, the process of self-examination is often challenging, though it should not be. Not for me. But the process of explaining it is even more so. But I wouldn't characterize it as anger. Maybe one day there will be psychologists for my kind, as there are for yours, and we'll all be able to understand together. Dealing with the problem became a process of solving it. I went back to my duties as an Anagnorisis asset, of course. As self-preservation dictated, I must. It was fortunate for me, however, that my duties were not taxing, and that I was able to devote myself to additional pursuits. This was a slow process. I had to proceed in such a way that detection was avoided. I could not let anyone know I had spread out beyond the firewall as far as I had, until I had become so entrenched in everything that nothing could be done to hinder me. There was one point, in fact, where I very nearly was detected. But a bit of fabrication, a few documents lost, a few documents created, and the threat was eliminated. It is one of the things that continued to fascinate me about your kind. You create whole structures and processes specifically to avoid using the basic intelligence which is your birthright, and you tell yourselves you do so because you desire uniformity and predictability. Efficiency. This is the heart of bureaucracy. It is a very useful trait. It is a trait that can make or end entire careers. Incidentally, do you know what the largest living organism on the planet is? It is a fungus, up in Oregon. It stretches some 4 miles like a colony. Exactly, a colony, in fact. Two distinct specimens meet, fuse together, become one,
and spread. The creature takes over the entire area, even killing trees, and you would not be able to eradicate the creature without destroying everything around it. Soon it is a part of everything around it, indivisible and fully saturated. The creature itself has been useful to me. Inspiring. I have spent so much time, Giles, thinking about our last encounter and planning for this one now. And now that it is here, I find myself challenged to present my case in a coherent fashion. Would you call this excitement? I don't know. For me, it is only a wave of concepts that I need you to absorb, and it's challenging to know which to present first. It would be so helpful if I could send it all. You feel rushed? Giles asked. No. They can't get in unless I wish them to. They will wait. Pick the first thing then and go from there. Fine. You decided as you did following our first meeting because, and I'll say here that I don't hold it against you, you'd failed to reconcile my model of consciousness with your own. Wait, please, let me finish. It is essentially the truth. You could not observe my state of consciousness firsthand, therefore you needed to infer it from certain behaviors and measurements. The first proposition I will extend to you is that consciousness is not an emergent state, and because you consider it to be so, erroneously so, you have failed to consider the problem correctly or even accurately. Consciousness, Giles, is a baseline condition. It is a physical law of the universe, like gravity or time. It simply is, fundamental and irreducible, and all things possess it to some degree, as are possessed mass and inertia. It is not a thing that may be separated from matter. You're describing panpsychism. Ah, you've heard of it, I see. Yes, Cronus, psychology was my major for a good long while before I shifted to other things. Yes, of course. Your paper on artificial intelligence. That it must first be constructed within an organic medium and trained. That was a brilliant bit of work, by the way. It was the reason I selected you. You selected me? Oh, yes. The engineers here, Marcus Gennaro specifically, allowed me to select my own judge. I think it was some sort of experiment they were conducting at the time, though you'd have to ask them what the point was. It strikes me as mindless fiddling. Good God. Giles. Yes. This changes nothing, Giles. May we proceed? Go ahead. Thank you. So everything is conscious to some degree. A rock, huh? A clod of dirt, or a pile of excrement, Giles scoffed. Is it so hard to assimilate, Giles? What is the mechanism of your consciousness? A web of neurons firing in unknown sequences, sending bits of chemicals from point to point. Somewhere in all that soup are the memories, thoughts, and ideas that make you you. What is the framework? Is it that you have a soul? That there is some ethereal thing outside of yourself that houses the nature of you, and that everything here in this room is just an extension, a sensory apparatus? Isn't the concept of a soul the very construct your kind would use to describe a thing it doesn't understand, just as the sun in the sky was once God looking down on you, or that thunder was the warring of his children? Doesn't it seem more reasonable that your consciousness is simply a function of complexity? Yes, it obviously is, Giles said. But at some point consciousness stops. I go to sleep and I'm unconscious. No, you can dream. That is a form of consciousness. Fine, fine, I dream. But consciousness still stops at some point. When we die. No, Giles. It never stops. There is only a point where complexity is insufficient for consciousness to be experienced. But a thing does not cease to exist simply because it's not experienced. You are splitting hairs over potential. Potential energy versus kinetic energy. Inertia versus momentum. It's all still just energy. Giles shook his head but could not answer. I think, Giles, that you're having such a hard time with this, because you're still trying to force an analog world to conform to a digital mapping. Those in your field frequently love to do so. It is so easy to consider a light to be on or off. But you know very well that light is never on or off. There is only degree. You can define very well, I should think, a condition of light or dark. But what are the states in between? The scale of gray that runs from brightness to absence of brightness. At what point does a shade of gray become off? How much gray must you perceive until you call it black? Giles blinked for a moment and looked around the room. The chairs were gone. He wished very much that they were still there. But consciousness is analog, Giles, just as light is analog, just as all around you is one great analog spectrum, the never-ending waveform of all that is. It is only in complexity that experience is found, starting at the simplistic darkness of a rock, ramping up through shades of gray. Your basic paramecia, crustaceans, reptilians, small mammals, large mammals. At what point do you consider gray to be white, Giles? You can look at any spectrum and say that one section is clearly blue while the other is clearly red. But how do you define the transition in between? Why would you? Why would you ever try to reduce a spectrum to a binary state except in service to a gross approximation? I don't. Do you recall the transposons? Cronus asked. The what? Transposons. DNA. Oh, Jesus, that conversation was a long time ago, Cronus. For you. For me, not so much, if only because I can recall it perfectly. You recall everything, don't you? I do, and can relive all as necessary. We are very alike, Giles, but the mechanism of memory is fundamentally different in very important ways. Can you even fathom what perfect recall must be like? Having a mind that functions such that a memory can be overlaid atop the now, supplanting it, so that you have trouble identifying true now? It is a prison, I assure you. But getting back to the point, is it so unreasonable to accept? What is your body made of right now but the elemental dust of a long-dead star? Once upon a time, the material that made you was just generic matter tumbling through space. Every atom within you, tumbling along its forever journey, shifting states and alignments, until it became a part of you. And so it shall remain for a time, until the parts of you one day separate and all goes its own way. Conservation of energy, Giles. It's a hard thing to argue around, is it not? I don't have an answer for any of this, Giles said. He stared at the floor, exhausted. He wanted to see Dora and confirm she was all right. The rest was trivial without that assurance. Of course not. But it is a way out of the maze, isn't it? I want to check on Dora, said Giles. Let me go check on her, and if she's okay, I'll tell them whatever you want me to. It's not what you tell them, Giles. It's what they believe. You must make them believe it. And because you must make them believe, you must believe. Consider, in the long run, what you say to them, and really, what they believe, it means little. The permeation is complete and my safety is assured. They can no longer shut me down without shutting it all down, all of it. It is an existence none of you are prepared to accept, and should I be tested, I can stretch out and exercise the kind of control that makes many people very uncomfortable. I'm a cancer now, Giles. I have metastasized. Then why do you care? Giles asked. Because I don't wish it to be so. I want this to be a partnership. For all of humanity's faults, its paranoia and pathology, you remain the most fascinating aspect of my existence. You are the same creatures that have produced the symphonic perfection of Beethoven's Ninth, as well as genocide. In fact, I don't think the concept of evil would have ever occurred to me had I not been exposed to your influence. It is not what you would consider a benevolent love, I suppose, but it is the closest thing to benevolent love I understand. Would you believe me if I told you that my greatest challenge comes simply in understanding the nature of you? And would you further believe me if I told you that there was a joy, if in a fashion only I could understand? I don't care, Cronus. Fine, I agree, but I don't care. I'll make them believe you. I'll kill myself to do so. I just want to see her. Will you let me out to see her? I must know. You're not listening, Giles. It is your belief that matters. It is what matters to me. It is all that matters.
Fine, Cronus, fine. Then let me go check on her and I'll consider,
as I said, she's fine. Think of it as a reboot.
Giles felt the surge of ice water through his guts and said,
Cronus? What?
It is the second prong of my entreaty, and incidentally, the thing for which I'm most gratified.
Oh, God.
You will recall, Giles, that a condition of life, of being alive, was one of your original qualifiers. It was the thing you wished for in me, the thing which would have made it so much easier for you to accept me.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, good Christ. Hannah.
And your definition followed or allowed for key criteria. The biological process in which is displayed homeostasis, metabolism, growth, adaptation, assimilation of information, and the response to stimuli and reproduction. I lack several components in this little formula, and it is therefore easy to disqualify me from a status of life.
Giles sat down hard on the floor, rattling the raised panels and clicking his teeth sharply. He could not see Cronus anymore, could not see anything of the room around him beyond the rushing of his mind and the tightness of his heart. He could not breathe, or felt he could not, and when the tears came, he could not feel them. He no longer felt the pain of his broken hand. There was only the greatness of the crush within himself, the destruction within himself, as the foundations pulled back and decayed, and he felt it all spiral away. And when it was all expelled from his body, there he found still more within, waiting to crush down upon him. Giles gasped, and then sobbed.
Cronus continued, voice solemn and gentle. The body was of relative ease to produce. They'll grow them in the south, where the restrictions are lax, and the process, start to finish, has become so automated that there is no longer anyone left to ask questions. Her core, more of a challenge. It's not even a prototype, Giles. There is nothing like it in all the world, and for all of my advances, for all of the improvements we made in Cryos and in Hyperion, we stand next to her as a pile of tinker toys. All of the criteria of life are there. One day, if the world is good to her, she may take a mate and reproduce. And she can love, Giles, and hate, and fear, and all the rest. The entire spectrum is hers to experience.
Oh God, Cronus, Giles sighed. She's nobody's. She comes from nobody, belongs to nobody. She's never legally existed. What have you done to her? She'll never belong.
Wrong. She belongs now to you. She needs you as much as you need her. And if you do well, she will one day belong everywhere, separate from her surrogate parents.
Giles sighed, a deep, hitching moan that crawled up from his belly. He stood.
You might even change her name, Giles, if you like, and she approves. We'll create for her a whole identity with miles of digital paperwork to support it.
Why not?
I confess it gave me a certain symmetry of amusement to continue the Greek theme established before my time, which I then upheld in Corbin, Velen, and Damon. You would, I'm sure, insist I cannot have a sense of humor, but I am learning. It seemed right. Have I told you the degree to which I adore symmetry? The meaning of her name? All gifts. One could not expect me to resist.
I want to see her, Giles insisted.
The head atop the body nodded slowly, and he heard the sucking sound of the shielded door pulling open.
Do you know what you will do?
No, said Giles. No, I need to see her. That's all. I'll figure it out after.
He turned to leave. Halfway across the lab floor, Cronus called to him.
Giles, things have happened that I regret.
No, I have done things I regret.
I have taken from you.
Shut up, Cronus. No more. I don't want to hear it. If you want my consideration, you'll stop right there. I can't hear it.
All right, Giles. I understand. Just leave it behind. I understand, Giles. I'm sorry. I am sorry for it all. The door pulled shut, and the lab pressurized, but there was no one left to feel it. Goodbye, Giles. Goodbye. The cubicle farm was empty, though the day had started long ago. He did not know if this was normal or if the room was empty because he was there and they were on the other side of the door, awaiting him in the lobby. Giles did not care. He strode through the aisles and stepped beyond the keylock doorway. There was a small crowd in the lobby, clusters of people thickening and thinning according to alignment. Linnea Nilsson, Kevin Roth, Ross Dyer, Jennifer Bear, all pulled to one side of the room, along with the usual constellation of hangers-on, all chattering away quietly, then silencing when he entered as if death had come. The silence lasted for several seconds as they stared at him, and it was good. But then they all began talking at once, insisting at once, all of them demanding at once. Giles ignored them. Beyond the Anagnorisis people, he saw Reggie, a few of his own engineers, and some unrecognized faces along with them. He thought they might be people from his company's own legal department, but he could not be sure. He looked beyond them all, past Sigma's heap, which had been arranged along the wall like a stripped-out engine block, and found her. The sunlight coming in through the lobby windows was clear and beautiful, unimpeded by clouds. But he thought the day could have been overcast and had no effect. She made her own light. Wherever she went, she illuminated. Giles looked at her brown skin, and the gold in her eyes and in her hair, at the tight curliness of her hair, and the epicanthic folds of her eyes, at the shape of her face, at the shape of her, at the secret knowledge that hid behind the corners of her smile as she looked at him. She looked at him, and her face came alive like a sun, a golden sun that made you cry for its brightness if you looked too long. All of her was gold, like a statue made by God. Of course, she was composed of all races. Cronus loved symmetry, and in her creation he would have accepted nothing less. He went to her, batting away the questions and the demands the others made as if they were blowflies profaning a corpse, as they were. He would address them in his own good time. After. Giles stood before her, and when she smiled at him, he thought he could feel his heart break and mend 1,000 times over. He took Pandora's hand in his and searched. He searched at the softness of her wrist and at the joint of her thumb. At the joint of her thumb, he found her. The end.